One of the necessary elements of any police state is the registration of its citizens and the issuance of an identification card that can be checked at any time. This is really a problem that we're having today, which is really manifesting itself with the Congress just passing this national ID card law, which I don't think it's been signed into law yet, has it?
I think it has.
Has he signed it?
I've seen it say public law, yes.
Okay, well, it has been signed into law. But any which way, you know, we really have to fight this. And about 4 years ago or so, David Carmichael, sitting on my right over here, came up to visit with us. And at that time, he was fighting the United States Navy because David refused to use a Social Security number for his service number. He wanted them to issue him a number. And I can recall sitting in a restaurant over lunch and telling him, well, I wish him well, but I don't think he'd be successful. Of course, I'm glad to say that I was totally wrong. And we need more men like David out there, and Herb, too. David and Herb, and Herb Titus sitting to my right, this is attorney. They've done a mammoth job in taking us down the road to fight this registration of citizens and the issuance of these cards. They are carrying this fight on, and that's one of the reasons why we're here tonight, because I'm with these gentlemen to tell you about their fight and how you can help. And the latter is very important, how you can help. So without further ado, I'll turn it over to David.
Hello. What I'm going to do is we're going to tell you a little bit about some of the work we've been doing toward obstacles and to jump hurdles for being free to do those things that are necessary in the ordinary course of life and business without having to confess this universal number. And as the Real ID is here now, the mandate is, if the Real ID is going to be utilized in a state to work as a national ID card or as a Real ID in accordance with the federal requirements, every person getting this card will be required to do a mandatory facial scan. It's very easy for me to conclude that if they're going to scan my face for the ID card, well, they're going to do the same thing at the airport so they can check the ID card against their computer, and it's going to have a RFID chip in it. So they can scan the card, and then you scan your face, and yes, sir, you can go right on the airplane. In fact, I just saw an email a few months ago down in Orlando, Florida. They're having this voluntary biometric identify yourself and get on the plane quickly and bypass all the security procedures. So these things are already occurring. What I'm going to do is I'm going to step back a bit and tell you what brought me here. You heard about the case against the United States. It was David Allen Carmichael versus the United States. And it stemmed from my making a request, a religious accommodation request to the Navy, that they would issue a service number, much like they did prior to 1972, where that's what they would use for their records. The bank is not using that for their records. You know, nobody else, the power company's not using that as their records. I don't have a problem with somebody having an account number for their account. But to use it as a universal identifier grieved me with regard to what I saw in Revelation and what was going to become and what we're seeing coming as each day progresses. So I'm going to give you my saga. Many of you came to the conclusion that all these things were wrong because you, as your civic duty, started studying the Constitution. And as soon as you read the Constitution and you see what's going on, you're appalled. You see, this doesn't match. And many people have come to the conclusion, have gotten rid of the Social Security number, found out it was voluntary and all that because of their studies. With me, I was minding my own business praying one day, and I came to the conclusion that I was supposed to forsake this number. I was in the middle of my Navy career, or actually nearing the end of my Navy career as a chief petty officer, and I knew that God wanted me to not use the number, and I didn't know a thing about it. So rather than to just chunk this number, I said, okay, God, I'll look into it. So what I did, I started asking questions. I'm sure you guys have asked the same questions. Went to Social Security, said, when do I have to get a Social Security number for my children? Or what does the law require? And the lady says, there is no law. It's completely voluntary. Well, my face just dropped, and I was like, oh, my goodness. well, I knew I could obey God and man. There wasn't be a there was not going to be a conflict. But then what would happen is, as my son was born and I was at the hospital, a lady who was the administrator asked, no, she ordered me to fill out this form to ask for a social security number. And as soon as I said, well, I really don't want to do that because I'm having these religious questions. And as soon as I said that, I was bombarded. I was just treated like dirt. And so that was a red flag for me. Something's wrong. Well, long story short there, I eventually went ahead and wrote to the Social Security number administration. I conveyed how I had been defrauded, that I'd never filled out an application, that it was grieving me spiritually, and that I could not in good conscience ever again identify with their number. I sent off their letter. Of course, they don't reply. And they didn't reply, and I was in the Navy, and I had something I needed to do. From that day forward, I never again identified with a Social Security number, and that was October 1st, 1996. Well, when I let my command know that, you know, when they'd give me some paperwork and I would line out the number, initial it, and I would, and finally made a formal request, instead of viewing their own records to see if it could be done, what they did is they began to take reprisal. Don't want to go into the list of details. It showed up in court. But they took reprisal. No consideration whatsoever for regulation. Nobody, the officers I dealt with, had no conscience at all with regard to what their obligations were under the law as officers of the United States Navy. They just took reprisal. Well, ultimately, they put me in a situation, without ever entertaining my request, to put me in a situation where they said, well, what you're going to do, Mr. Carmichael, you're going to sign here on this affidavit. And by the way, it's not normal, but we put a Social Security number right after your name on the affidavit. And if you line that out and initial it, we're going to say that you're voiding your own contract voluntarily. So, and we're also going to write you up for altering instruments, okay, altering a document. And they said, and since if you don't sign this, and if you void it voluntarily, we're just going to consider that you're voluntarily getting out. Well, I was in a jam. No matter what I did, unless I forsook my conscience, I was going to look like I was getting out. Well, what I did this. I raised my hand. I gave an oath. I said, before two or more witnesses, let every word be established. And there was a bunch of witnesses, all but one were against me. And I basically reiterated vocally what my obligation was to the service and that I would fulfill my obligated service, even to my hurt. Furthermore, I saith not. And I dropped my hand. Well, the next word out of their mouth was, discharge him. So I was discharged. Now here I was, minding my own business, 17 years into the Navy. I'm on my last shore duty before retirement. I've got a wife, three children, and a mortgage. But I knew what my boundary was. I knew that I didn't really have a choice. And what I understood in faith, too, is if I was not able to stand, then my children can't stand. So how can I expect them to do something that I'm not willing to do? So found myself unemployed. What was exciting about being unemployed was my first day out of the service, and I didn't have a title. I wasn't chief petty officer or anybody. Well, what do I do? You know, so you know what I did? I got up, I prayed, and I said, Lord, what do you want me to do today? And that changed my life. Since then, I get up every day, and I pray. And I say, God, what do you want me to do today? Sometimes he gives me labor for money. Sometimes he gives me an opportunity to minister to somebody. Sometimes I give labor for free. It depends on the situation. I'm free now to just do what I need to do. And I will tell you, though, I have not had an orthodox job since then. I've had a lot of divine intervention that's kept us alive. Now, all that being said, as I was going along, I had to determine, well, what do I do? What do I do about my military forsaking law? Oh, my goodness, if the military is forsaking law, we're all in trouble. I knew I had an obligation to hold them accountable. I tried to find lawyers that would help me. Well, you don't win against the military. And you don't, for the last 15 or 20 years, went on an SSN issue. It just doesn't happen. So I couldn't find a lawyer to help me. I finally filed pro se in the court of claims and was doing very badly. Well, Herb actually complimented me. Said I was doing well, but the problem was the judge was ignoring everything I was saying. And I'm sure many of you have experienced that kind of thing. Well, what happened was I prayed and I said, you know, I needed help. And, well, Herb Titus, by the way, isn't just generally open for business. It's one of those things where he's very busy on very important things, and it's kind of like divine intervention if your paths cross at the right time. And that's exactly what happened. And he read everything I wrote. He saw it was a very difficult case, but he understood that there was enough in there that it was possible to hold the government accountable. So that's what we did. And at the time, I was flat broke. But, you know, we got through it. And so we got through it, and we worked it till I guess we started in with Herb helping me in 1999. And finally, in 2002, we had a appeals court, Court of Appeals, Federal Circuit, ruling in our favor that rebuked the lower court for dismissing their case. They just kind of flippantly kicked me out of court. Well, we got an appeals court ruling that was strongly in our favor. Some of that information that they ruled is in a handout that you've been handed. And then it had to go back to the lower court. They had to sort through the things, and they recognized my separation was not voluntary. I was put in a position where I had to either forsake God or stay in the Navy. That's not voluntary. You know, that's coercion. So they admitted that, and then they also admitted or turned out that the Navy had basically violated every rule they're supposed to follow. And so, you know, one thing about that I've learned in this court case issue is that you don't just walk in with a right and wrong message. What you have to do is go in knowing that you're walking with the truth, and then you're going to need to artfully go stair-step fashion with victory after minor victory in that same court case where the opposition in many cases is the government is actually lying to the judge, and you got to put that rabbit to bed step by step by step by step. Ultimately, it kind of sifts it all out to all we have left is the truth. And it took many years. We finally got a judgment November of last year after me starting it in 1998. And we're still working some issues. So that's what I learned. Now, in the meantime, well, I can't get a driver's license. You know, I've read the Virginia laws, the Religious Freedom Act that's 200 years old. That's all in my favor. I've got Article 1, Section 16 of the Virginia Constitution is all in my favor. I should not be put in a situation where I have to forsake my faith in order to drive a car. I can't vote, can't get a bank account, can't get an Orthodox job. Now, some of you have been victorious in getting those things, but generally, as you're going around without the universal number, everybody's telling you no. And you ask, is there a religious accommodation? No. Well, in America, there's no religious accommodation. It doesn't equate. So through this, what we've been doing is Herb's been watching me as he's been kind of walking with me, is we've identified that there's these hurdles that need to be overcome. If they can't be overcome with an administratively convenient SSN, how under a religious liberties issue, if religious liberties cannot have victory over administratively convenient SSN, how are we going to have any other issue taken care of when they ramp everything up to a national security issue? See, the real ID is a national security issue. It's up a rung. Why can't even religious liberty is now lower than administrative convenience? If we can't win there, how are we going to not give our facial scan or our thumbprint or whatever? Hey, it's on the ID card now. What do you got to do to get on an airplane? Well, I got to give them the ID. I got to give my thumbprint. They just scan my head or whatever they're going to do to get me to do those things which are necessary in the ordinary course of life and business. So the vision I had was to start an organization where, like you, this is a fantastic fellowship. You meet each other's needs and you identify with one another. Well, there's some people out there with the same conviction that I have. It's not just merely the political thing. They know that God's given them a boundary. And guess what? They're having trouble living in America with a religious, truly bona fide conviction. So I realized, you know what? We need to be a society of people so that we're recognized, oh yeah, there is this group of people has a rational conviction. It's biblically based. They're not anti-government. They're not out trying to destroy the world. They're simply trying to live while they're obedient. So I started what is called the American Christian Liberty Society. And essentially the membership is you write a letter and tell me your convictions. Tell me if what you think agrees with what I think, the area of my life is a boundary, and then we're going to support one another. We're going to encourage one another, give each other information. And while that happened, there was a gentleman in Idaho who had a conviction that he could not identify the Social Security number. He tried to get a driver's license. In Idaho, they have a free exercise of religion-protected statute, which says that the government must prove they're absolutely compelled to deny the person their religious practice. And even if they're absolutely compelled, they have to at least try to visit to see if there's a less restrictive means to try to, you know, meet that compulsion without ruining the person's faith situation. So this guy, Larry, was fighting this battle alone, and he had a catastrophe in his family, a health issue that was really put everything on hold right in the middle of his brief to the Idaho Appeals Court. So he called me on the phone, and he said, "Help." And fortunately, Herb was not busy that week. "Hey, Herb, you know how we were going to try to work all this way up through the stair step in Virginia? Well, this guy's already up a whole bunch of rungs in Idaho, and he needs our help. What are you doing this week?" Well, fortunately, Herb had an empty week. And he jumped in there, got a reply brief in, and since then we've had a whole bunch of ladders. Again, more briefs that had to come, supplements. Finally, we had the appeals court in Idaho look at the religious freedom, free exercise of religion protected statute, and then they looked at Title 42, Section 666, which requires every state taking welfare funds to mandate that people give a Social Security number in order to get a professional license, occupational license, recreational license, driver's license, or marriage license. Section 666 of the welfare code versus the free exercise of religion protected statute in Idaho. Larry's not a deadbeat dad. He's not into the system. His wife is committed to not being in the system. They're committed to lifetime marriage. They have certain biblical convictions, and they stick with them, and they support each other in their society. But the appeals court in Idaho ruled that Section 666 of Title 42 supersedes the free exercise of religion-protected statute in Idaho. A whole bunch of money, political money, went into getting that statute passed, because we know the federal RFRA, religious, whatever the RFRA is, okay, Religious Freedom Restoration Act, the federal doesn't apply in the state unless there's some federal tie in the situation. So here Idaho passes statute trying to make sure they're preserving religious liberties, but suddenly the appeals court says in Idaho of their own statute that it's superseded by Title 42, Section 666. Okay, so there is a need. If we cannot have liberty under a strong religious freedom statute over an administratively convenient SSN, all other liberties are lost, folks. It's all a trickle down from what you see right there. That poster, and it's, you can't hear it on the radio, but it says biblical world, a view of government. It's divinely ordained. State authority is limited. And a biblical world leads to patriotism and all these things that it's talking about there. If we don't have the liberty to obey the almighty lawgiver, we're in trouble. Privacy rights, property rights, it all is a trickle-down benefit of pure liberty, and that's the liberty and obligation to obey God without government reprisal. Government's compelling interest is to preserve our liberty. That is their compelling interest. How they manage that is the kind of things that we vote for people in office to work that out. So there's an important thing here. And with regard to the real ID and the things then coming in, the coming encroachments, my vision is that we would take the SSN issue, which is winnable. We've filed a petition for review in the Idaho Supreme Court. It's winnable. It's administrative convenience. We have free exercise of religion protected statute. And then if we win, we recover our attorney's fees. Guess what? There's a crop duster in Texas, 60-year-old man, not a deadbeat dad. They won't give him his pesticide license unless he gives an SSN. Well, he can't do it. He just can't do it. And so now he's not crop dusting. What's he going to do for a living? He's been a crop duster for 40 years. You know, they have a free exercise of religious protected statute in Texas where you can win a case and then recover your attorney's fees. Well, I got another guy in Illinois. Same statute in Illinois. And his case is sort of building. So the vision I had was to start this American Christian Liberty Society. In fact, some of your fellowship has, you know, joined me, has written me a letter and conveyed their convictions. And then to go to states and win winnable winnable cases that we can get the courts to actually start talking about what really is a compelling interest of government. What is really the boundaries of government with regard to this religious liberty? And my hope is that that's going to set a foundation for other liberties. The same principles of law, you connect the dots. It helps the judges to see something very simply and clearly laid out so that they can connect the dots and give a righteous judgment that somebody's not going to overrule. And so that's what we're here to talk about. That's my background. And we're going to, I guess, we'll take an audio break shortly. But do we have a few minutes to let Herb jump in here? Okay.
Thank you, David. It really is a privilege for me to be here with my client. One of the things that lawyers appreciate are clients who persevere. And one of the things that I'm sure that you're aware of is that if you get into a legal fight, you better be ready to stay with that fight for some time. This is not the longest case that I've had. I've been representing Michael New for over 10 years, and we're still fighting for Michael New's rights, and we're now at the last stage of filing a petition for certiorari in the United States Supreme Court. But I remember the time when I first met David, and I could see from what he had done on his own that here was a fighter. Here was someone who really believed what he said, and here was someone who was going to stand no matter what. And I knew that this was going to be a tough battle because we were dealing with the United States Navy. And if you've ever had any dealings at all with the United States military, when they take a stand, they don't back off. And that was precisely what we faced in this particular case. Well, there's one watchword I have in my practice, and that's Proverbs 21:1. The heart of a king is as a channel of water in God's hands. He moves it whichever way that he wishes. Now, if the heart of a king is as a channel of water in God's hands, then any judge is likewise as water in God's hand. And the major task we had was to present David's claim before the judge. It was not for me to persuade the judge in our favor. That's God's business. What we had was a duty to be a witness to the truth with regard to David's claim, and that was how we approached this particular case. Now, one of the things that you find yourself making mistakes is when you begin at the back end of a case rather than the front end of the case. Oftentimes we go to the Bill of Rights, for example, before we go to Article 1, Article 2, and Article 3 of the Constitution. And it's important for us to remember that Article 1 through Article 7 of the Constitution was written before the Bill of Rights. As a matter of fact, the Bill of Rights came as an amendment to the Constitution. And it's important when you get into these kinds of battles that you go to the first question first. And that is this question: by what authority has the civil government acted? By what authority? Not what are the limits on the authority of the government actor, but by what authority? Now go back and look at the Declaration of Independence, which is the charter of the nation, where it says that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, among which are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Now listen, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Now notice, the first order then of business is find out what have the people consented to, in order to find out why, what authority is this government action been taken. Now, what was interesting about David's case was that the most important thing was not the First Amendment, although we had a First Amendment claim, but the most important thing was to find out by what authority had the Navy kicked him out. And where do you go? You go to the regulations. Now, I found out something about chief petty officers. I found out what the word petty means. It means paying attention to every little thing. And the beautiful thing about David as a client was that he'd done most of the research work before he ever walked into my office. I just had to pay attention to what he had discovered because he was very meticulous and very careful. He knew how to keep captains out of trouble. That's what chief petty officers do, is to keep captains out of trouble. Well, this chief petty officer kept this lawyer out of trouble,
because he got me to read the regulations. And lo and behold, I found a regulation that was specifically applicable to his case that the Navy had completely ignored. And so we built our case around their own rules. Now, there's one thing that a lawyer has learned, and that is that if you can catch the enemy in not obeying their own rules, then they have a very difficult time getting out of that squeeze play. But let me tell you, in this particular case, they had a judge who didn't want David in his courtroom. And he didn't listen to our arguments the first time around, because he wanted to get rid of this case. Many, many times, that's the reason why you lose in the first round, is because the judge doesn't want to see you in the courtroom, and especially in this kind of a case. He didn't want to see David in his courtroom. Now we have to take a break, and we'll come back and see what God did to keep him in his courtroom.